Welcome to Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. I am Kyle Maltzier. I'm your host here of Contagious Podcast, and I am the Marketing and Business Development Director at Nelson Mazda and Nelson Auto Group. I'm so excited that you have decided to join me this morning and join my friend Emiliano Void. I am so excited to share with you our conversation. I learned a ton. I got to encourage him and also be encouraged. He has such a passion for the culture in the automotive industry. He's a brother from Canada. So I'm getting to expand my network, and I hope to expand yours. And you're going to want to connect with him after you hear some of the really cool things he's doing. Also, even just some of the data and the stats that he shares about the opportunity for impact that the automotive industry has. So here is our conversation. I hope you're encouraged by it, and I cannot wait for you to meet Emiliano. So, all right. So Emiliano, first of all, I'm so pumped to hang out with you right now. We've been jamming for about 15 minutes already. Say hi to the people. Do the old wave if they're watching. So we were talking before, and you were just getting me hyped. So I'm just going to jump right in. We're not even going to go with, you can get into your whole story in just a second, but you were talking before, and you were saying, like, we need more people in your shoes talking more often and being in platforms where we can explain the story, particularly of Black people in automotive. 100%. Talk to me about what you're doing right now to make sure that happens, and let's just riff.
Yeah, so thanks first and foremost for taking the time to chop it up with me for a bit. It's a pleasure to be here. Always great opportunity to get out and really have these conversations, like you said, really on elevated platforms, right? It's absolutely critical if we're going to look to tackle a problem of the size and scale and complexity of systemic racism and anti-Black racism. We need to generate awareness so that we can lead to education about it, so we can lead to actionable solutions around it. So for me and what I'm doing on my side of the fence, I'm not like a caped social crusader, you know, like I'm an inner city kid. I grew up a little rough. I'm the last of seven. And I just, with the whole like George Floyd murder stuff, I got riled into action. You know, the first emotion that I lived when I kind of saw that stuff was immediate anger. I was angry. I was upset at the fact that, you know, in 2020, this is as far as we've come as a society and in the number one country in the world, you know? So I made a quick phone call. I called my pops, typically not the person that I go to for advice. He's tough. He grew up really hard in inner city DC. He did Vietnam, part of the Marine Corps. So he's a little rough around the edges, but I didn't know who to talk to. So I called my pops and I told him, hey man, I don't know what to do, but I'm angry. And I'm not usually doing smart things when I'm angry. I was like, so what do I do with this whole thing? And he said, listen, Emil, if you really want to, you know, be angry and try to impact real change, it's not going to be through destructive things. You can't go out and fight cops. That's not what's going to change the world. He was like, but you have an opportunity, right? You have a social network that you leverage. You have a great organization you're a part of. If you're serious about driving real change and certainly for improving quality of life and opportunities for your community, go out and affect impact at a legislative level, in boardrooms, do everything you can to try to make more space for Black people at the table. So I just picked it up and started running with it. Put together this thing in Burlington, Vermont, where I got a spot right now, called the Black Financial Alliance, which is a community-based organization that tries to collect Black service professionals, entrepreneurs, and focused organizations for us to have consolidated representation and really promote a concept called group economics. So that was kind of my first like foray into trying to help anybody outside of my immediate circle. It was interesting because what I've seen from doing good work is that good work promotes good work. I immediately shifted those efforts from community-based focus to approaching my organization and really pushing hard for there to be a Black-focused employee resource group so that we could create a safe space for Black people to really express themselves and go through all the emotions that really the media is just bombing us with it. You know, certainly when the George Floyd murder happened, and we were just looking for an outlet and really a place that we could come together as a community within a professional setting and just have, you know, this open space to speak with each other. So we put this cool thing together called the Black Employee Network, which is the first Black-focused employee resource group in any Cox automotive market anywhere, which is really cool. We're looking at tackling anti-Black and systemic racism by focusing on our three pillars, which are like education, celebration, and inspiration. But that work then transformed into something even bigger. So it was really impressive the kind of immediate support and encouragement that we got from certainly our leadership team and really the organization as a whole. It's crazy because everybody knows racism is a bad thing and things need to be done, but everybody's looking for the way to go about it, right? What's the proper channel? What can I say? What can I say? Is it more like white savior complex or is this real support and allyship? And so we knew that there was an opportunity with the momentum that we had to really go after this thing on a larger scale. So we started a non-for-profit called Accelerate Auto, which tackles anti-Black and systemic racism and really the lack of representation for Black people across the entire Canadian automotive industry. So the Canadian automotive industry generates about a third of the GDP, you know, that industry and all its ancillary services, about a third of the Canadian GDP. And for us to be able to put something together, get incredible and immediate resounding support and really buy-in from the industry as a whole, it just goes to show that if you bring, you know, good work to the table, good people will follow. And that's at least from my end, as some knucklehead kid from, you know, from the gritty streets of Montreal, Canada, if I can do this kind of work and get this kind of focus and attention on the subject matter, everybody can help.
Yeah. I want to go way back. Like when you first started and you said, I got angry. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm a big talk about emotions guy and not a lot of guys are big on talk about emotions, but I'm a big talk about emotions guy. And when we talk about anger, we talk about that there's a gift with anger, right?
Sure.
And that gift is passion. And I think what you're explaining here is that instead of anger driving you to rage, anger drove you to passion. And that passion is being displayed in a lot of the things that you're doing. So I'm like here just to throw an encouragement. I'm super encouraged by the way that your anger has driven you to a passion to encourage and inspire others. So that not much more than that, but just to be an encouragement to you, hopefully in that. So so I want to ask you, so you're in Canada working with Cox Automotive and doing your thing there. And that's the company that you're expressing a lot of this through and fortunately has a large gamut in which Cox Automotive, even in Canada, touches. Mm-hmm. So tell me about what that bringing together process looked like and is looking like from getting the word out, drawing people together and ensuring that platform just isn't kind of like this little like side pin in the wall, but that it's present.
Yeah. And really to your point, Kyle, I think passion is the fuel that really burns this thing and makes it move. For us, it was real simple, right? We just looked around the room and there was a ton of Black people in our organization that were passionate and beyond Black people, right? There were a ton of just great, high quality individuals that were tired of seeing the same thing go about it and weren't even aware, you know, felt like maybe they're contributing to the issue directly or indirectly and just wanted to get like better educated, better acquainted with the problem so that they could better position themselves to help solve it. So again, just like, you know, a few of the key components that we've seen, and it's been a resounding really effect in every capacity that we've done this work, find passionate people, right? You can't make up for just sheer effort. There's nothing that will bring more to the table than really just a ton of effort and relentless pursuit of an objective that makes sense and really being able to promote this in a more public setting and really in a vocal way. It really disarms people that are on the fence of being like, oh, you know, I don't know, if, you know, can I say this? Am I doing this the right way? How do I help? How do I not help? By being really vocal and proactive about it, we've really caused this really rallying effect for like-minded individuals to find a place where if they really care enough to try to put concrete steps towards dismantling anti-Black and systemic racism within communities, within organizations, within industries, they have a place to come to, and it's a completely safe environment where we can discuss things and have uncomfortable conversations and really learn from each other as we figure out a way to go about this to create real, sustainable, and scalable change in a way that we haven't seen before. So passion and really not shying away from the subject matter, like I said before, if we're not doing a good enough job of generating awareness, we'll never get people educated enough to care about it. And if we can't do that, then there's really no opportunity for us to find a real solution to it. So talking about it, being vocal about it, being prevalent and being proud of the fact that this is something that we're going after and we're going after hard certainly has creating, like I said, this kind of rallying effect and impact on people. So it's been really cool, man.
Yeah. You know, I think for a lot of people, it's just like that first hand raise is a little bit tough. And sometimes if there's not a place to raise your hand that's willing for you to raise your hand, then that's like the biggest barrier, right? And I think what you're doing is going, look, raise your hand, ask the question, be a part of it. We're here now. We're available for that. And we're willing to hear and listen and encourage. And so that's a big deal. I want to key in on, you said these kind of like three pillars, and I want to hear how they impact like your action. So the first one was education, I think. How does that first pillar play into like the activity that you're doing to educate, not just specifically within Cox, but also in the wider automotive community, in Canada?
Yeah, that's a great question. And just for full context and transparency, I've been having these conversations on both sides of the fence, right? I was fortunate enough just yesterday to present to the House of Commerce, the Chamber of Commerce, in Burlington, Vermont, on, you know, huge bills that are looking to bring funding into Black and BIPOC communities. So this conversation is not one that lives in just one place, right? The problem is everywhere, and the opportunity for us to find creative solutions to try to solve it are also everywhere. One of the things that, in the education component, I'll make sure to circle back, but one of the things that's really tough about the conversation about racism in this country in particular and in the US is it's kind of subjective, right? Like, oh yeah, you guys had a Black president. What do you mean there's racism here? Like, what, you know, you got one of them. What's the problem? The reality is, you know, the outliers are never representative of the reality. You know, that's one specific instance, and it's great in the right direction, but certainly to assume that because we elected one Black president that racism is no longer an issue in this country, you know what I mean? That's a tough pill to swallow. So along the line of thought of educating people so that we do away with this subjective approach to racism and really get people to appreciate and embrace the objective nature of racism and the statistical impact that it has on Black communities all across the world. And I found some crazy numbers while I was kind of just like educating myself on how all this stuff comes around. But there are about 330 million people in the US, 42 million of them approximately are Black people. That's about 13% of the population. Out of the Fortune 500 companies that are run in the US, 457 in December of last year were ran by white people. Four in December of last year were ran by Black people. Certainly that number has changed and there's been more visibility since last year, but still it's a stark minority. Specifically on the automotive side of the fence, 18,000 approximate franchise dealerships in the US, 261 are identified as owned by Black people. That's less than 2%, right? Like, again, we have to figure out and we have to get to a point where we can knock off this piece where racism is an opinion or it's you know, you feel that way because you're part of that community and it doesn't really have an impact beyond that. That's completely false. One of the numbers that jumped off the page at me and really like, some of this stuff hurts my heart, man. And I think that's why it's so important to get the conversation out there and let it be known. But Black women, in order to make the equivalent, the average Black female worker, in order to make the same amount as the average white man in America, would have to work 591 calendar days in a year. How, you know what I mean? Like we have to get comfortable with the fact that racism is not an opinion. Racism and really more importantly, systemic racism is something that is tangible, that has real impact and real devastating impacts specifically to the Black community all across, you know, the US, certainly Canada, and on a global scale. So again, to circle back to your question about education, why it's important, ultimately, the more that we can do away with these perceptions or these notions that, you know, it only lives and it has a minimal impact and it's a question of preference or it's a question of opinion, we have to do away with that. People have to get comfortable looking at this problem right in the face, being comfortable with the numbers and the impact that it represents statistically so that realistically we as a collective community can move towards, you know, the right direction of solving the problem.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I mean, like I'm getting educated. I'm writing over myself. I accidentally wrote three. You're going to have to send me all those stuff because I wrote it on top of each other.
Yeah, I got you. Well, it's funny because just to kind of follow up on that, Kyle, people look at Canada and they say, well, you know, who's the
y'all nice? Got it made. Y'all get it.
You know, like, hey, man, there's no problem in Canada. Everybody's nice. You guys say, hey, a lot, apologize a lot. What's the problem there? Well, Canada's pretty interesting. There are about 1.2, 1.3 million Black people in Canada, which is about 3.5% of the country's population. Of the governing bodies that run the country through a parliamentarian system, there are 443 of those people. 10 of them are Black people. There we've identified 3,300 franchise dealerships in the Canadian automotive industry. We are yet to identify a single Black-owned dealership in Canada. So again, you know, like, this is not an opinion. There's nothing about this that is rooted in opinion. This is statistical fact of systems and structures that considerably create better opportunities one way and marginalize consistently the other. And so again, you know, to the point of education, if we're not comfortable having open and honest conversations about the real impact that these kinds of systems and structures drive and the way they impact our communities as a whole, there's no shot in hell that we take a look at finding a real solution for it. So we got to get comfortable having these uncomfortable conversations, and we got to be proud enough and brave enough, I think, to stand up and have them in a public forum every opportunity we have.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And the education is absolutely necessary. It's necessary from my part, because like, even though I can go, I can acknowledge this and I see it, and it's, and like the, I've had enough conversations with yourself and friends of mine, and I got to have the conversation with Erica a couple of weeks ago. Like, it's present. I know that. But there's a next level of education that, like, I want to be able to speak the same words of truth about the data, about the facts that you're saying on a regular basis. So like, I'm not kidding you. I want you to, like, we're connected. I want you to send me that stuff, because I like, that's a part of the advocacy that I want to bring. Sure. And that I think there are many other people that want to bring to that. And it's not just about you educating, but it's about me advocating, educating with you, I think.
Agreed.
If I would have to, if I can lay into that a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. And like I said, you know, 13% of the population is not enough to bear the burden of responsibility for education for that other 87%. Mm. We don't have people that care enough or empathetic enough and curious enough to pick up some of the burden of responsibility of self-education first and foremost. Without allyship and large-scale support, there's just not enough of us to drive this change in a way that's going to, you know, lead us in a fundamentally different position than where we found ourselves, you know, last year when we watched a guy get killed in the street by cops.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the second one, and I'm excited to hear about what you're saying about this, but it was celebration.
Right? Yeah.
So what does celebration look like for you in the networks that you're in? How do you go about, you know, empowering people to celebrate the good things and the goodness and the wins and things like that?
Yeah, I think it's a like visible representation of Black people, the Black community, or at least for us in the work that we're doing, is a huge, huge, huge critical component of it. So really celebrating not only the achievements of Black people, you know, all along the way, but also like celebrating the Black people and what they bring to company cultures as a whole is a critical component of the work that we're doing. We kicked off our inaugural launch event last month, February 8th, in Black History Month. And this was the first Cross Cox Automotive International celebration of a Black History Month event ever. Wow. You know, and like I said, it's 2021, you know what I mean? But we think it's so critically important to showcase the impact, the positivity, the contributions, and also the fact that we're here and we're proud and we deserve a seat at the table equally as the same as everybody else. So really making sure that we show and consistently show positive representation for the Black community, because for quite a bit of time, quite a long part of the life that I've lived while growing up and most people beyond that, the representation of Black people in the media or on the nightly news is really not great. You know, like, you're typically the bad guy, the drug dealer, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, we need more active representation, examples to follow, positive role models, and celebrating that is an absolute critical component to really shifting mindset and narrative around what people associate with typically, you know, Black representation that they've seen, like I said, in TV and movies and media. We really have to get out there and show people, like, we have so much to offer. You know, we as a community and as a collective, we have so much to offer, and it's really important to celebrate that and to showcase that, at least from what we've seen from our side of the fence, it really works.
Yeah. Well, and I think like when I think about, you know, the celebration, and you brought up, you know, one Black president or like Black athletes, or like, there's some celebration in the community, right? But I think that sometimes, and I was talking to another friend, it's like, it's almost this unrealistic place to obtain, right? And or it's just like it almost feels like it's one off. But like when people that are watching and following you in your company or other people like you in similar companies, that it doesn't feel as much one off, right?
Sure.
It feels like, oh, that's wow, that is a story that can be celebrated. Not just that, but there's a pathway to that story for me. And I'm gonna lay on a guy that I talked to a few weeks ago again, that his name is Demetrius, and he said this. He was like, we who have been in this place, that have gotten to this place, you, him, other people in your shoes, get the opportunity to send the ladder back down, right? Mm-hmm. To like show the steps. And I think that's the type of celebration that I'm hearing you talk about. And yeah. And that's super encouraging that more people are coming out of the woodwork like yourself going, I'm going to send the ladder back down. I'm going to show people what it looks like to celebrate. And we're going to make those stories really, really visible in within the community and outside the community, the Black
community. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's or at least for us, you know, we feel a sense of responsibility. You know, not everybody gets an opportunity to sit down, you know, and have these conversations like this in this setting. The work that we're doing across all of our initiatives. And what's really interesting about automotive is such a prevalent lack of Black representation in this industry that provides amazing opportunities for everybody that's in it.
No
and
doubt.
It's crazy because like, if you don't know automotive, you have no idea the size and scale and the opportunities that are within it. So some of the critical components of the work that we're looking to do as a whole certainly is to tackle anti-Black and systemic racism and educate organizations and industries on it. But also part of a huge component of the work that we're doing is to present all of these really viable, really profitable opportunities that exist throughout the automotive industry and pump those into Black communities.
Yeah. Build,
bridge the gap, you know, extend the ladder, whatever it is. But like it can't, the fact that we are a underrepresented minority, if we as the people that are underrepresented don't do what we have to do to change that and change that in a real and tangible way, that's not on anybody but us. And we certainly feel a sense of responsibility. And that's why it's a critical component of all of the work that we're doing, not only to fight the good fight, but also to extend a hand back, bring more people of our community on board, because this is a great train to be on. And I would encourage, you know, as many people as possible to get involved.
Man, I could not agree more. Like, this is such a good industry. Yeah. It's so good. And it's good for like way more people than understand it right now. That's what's crazy is we've got to get that word out that these stories of how much opportunity is in our industry for people that never thought that they could have opportunity before. It's like, it's reachable. It's not some far out dream. It's not some pipe dream for the opportunity. It's like right there and tangible. And particularly for those in minority communities or otherwise rejected communities. And I think I mean, you said it, like 1/3 of the GDP of Canada is the automotive industry is a part of. Like if the automotive industry can be the representation for this in the US and Canada, like think about the number of industries that would touch.
Of course.
Wow.
Yeah. But you know, you think, and really the like, the reputation of automotive as an industry is something that's notoriously slow to turn and react and adjust and catch up to the times.
For sure.
We can differentiate ourselves as trailblazers and as the tip of the spear for an industry that has put their hand up and said, hey, we understand that there's been a problem here, and directly or indirectly, we've been contributing or at least allowing it to perpetuate up to this point. We're tired of it, and we're going to fundamentally change our approach because we feel like at the size and the scale of the numbers that we move as an industry, we can put a real dent in this thing. I'm telling you, and just the fact that we're doing it and we're fortunate enough to have the opportunity to do that kind of work across the Canadian automotive space, if I could turn around and pump that thing into the US, boy, this thing will move.
Man, you're going to. That's what I know it. I'm going to just say it. Like, I'm excited because I believe that you're going to. I really do. And I think there's going to be people that are just going to open doors for you as more people hear what you're doing in Canada. So maybe someone's listening to this podcast and is like, here's a swinging, like, we'll drop his contact information right at the end.
Get at me. I'm not hard to find.
That's awesome. All right. So last one, I think you've touched on it, but that pillar was inspire. So what are you doing to, what's your vision for inspiring the Black community and other communities toward this goal?
I think the biggest thing that we can look to inspire is action. You know, so much of this is being had and conversations are happening all over the place and everybody's got an opinion on it, and this is the right thing, this is the wrong thing to do. Quite often that's where the buck stops, right? People talk about it, they feel good about the fact of conversations. Hey man, talk to my Black friend, he told me, you know, I could do this, I could do that. Cool, we keep it moving. Moving beyond that point is where the real change and the real work starts to happen. So inspiring people to action, and we touched on it a couple of times, there's a lot of great people out in the world sitting right on the fence, not knowing which direction to go with it. Hey, they want to help, but they don't know how to. They want to reach out, but they're scared to offend. Inspiring people to action, I think, is the most critical component of the work that we can do, because the more people that we can get to care about this thing, the more people we can get involved in this thing, the better of an opportunity we have to actually drive real change. And that's, I mean, for us and really in the fact and the way that we're trying to approach this work, it's always with an open door. There can be no solution that looks to bring people together that is divisive in nature. So for us, there's a spot at the table for literally everybody, because if we don't do this as a collective and if we don't do this as a community, the opportunities just drop considerably. Like I said before, there's just not enough of us. You know, there's 13% of the population in the US, 3.5% of the population in Canada. We need solicitation for support and allyship in this step in order for it to really happen, and really inspiring people to take that real first step. And for me, that first step led to unbelievable situations and scenarios that I had no intention of falling into when I started. So really the big message for me, and it's cool for me to be able to share it because I share it from lived experience, you know, and it's not something that happened 10 years ago, something that happened like 14 months ago. So for me to be able to let people know, like, hey, listen, like every single one of you who is out there right now looking for a way to contribute to ending this problem, or at least moving it in a considerably forward direction, just start somewhere. There's great community organizing that happens everywhere around you. Brilliant people working really hard on trying to bring creative solutions to the table. It's not that hard to find your spot to fit into. But really, I promise you, taking that first step, you would be amazed at the kind of support and encouragement that you get from like-minded individuals that you never would have thought of. I've been in rooms presenting to 21 of the 24 manufacturers that operate in Canada. All of them. Now, I mean, not a single Black person in the room, not a single woman in the room either. But I sit at the table and I'm like, if there's a group of people that probably are not super thrilled to hear from a young vocal Black man, you know, very easily it could be this, you know, and that's just my, you know, my bias to the way that things are structured. But having these conversations with these people, they turn on like a light. You can see it go on in their head. You see the way their face changed. They understand the issue. They've been looking for the right channel to put their efforts and really their actions and their initiative behind, and continuously creating this desire for people to step forward and cross that line from just talking about it and internalizing it to concrete action. If we can do anything to continue to inspire that progression, we're doing all of the right work in all of the right places.
That's a big deal, man. I don't want to dumb it down to this, but it's like, if all you do is internalize this podcast that you're listening to, if you're one of the 50, 100, 150, 2000 people that, and all you do is attempt to internalize it, what good is it? At minimum, I mean, just the smallest piece, like go have one conversation with one person about what you have experienced or heard, right? And I think that that's what you're saying. It's like, you have to, like, at minimum, start somewhere, right? And then that's what's crazy. And what you were just saying is what's crazy about that one conversation, or that two or three, four conversation, or that Google search, or that connection to organization, like the doors start just like sliding open, right in front of you. And you're like, wow, I can just walk through these. This is crazy. I've experienced that personally in the last 5 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. My man, the guy who connected us because he listened to my podcast and was like, oh, dude, you would love talking to this Emil guy. Yeah. Okay, sounds good. And I do. Right.
Fair enough.
And so I think that's a big piece to action. So, yeah, man. And any kind of like parting or encouraging words that you would have for someone that's maybe listening? Maybe their minds are getting open to this right now. Currently, they're listening to the podcast and they're like, whoa, I've heard all this. I've listened to all this. But the way that he said it started opening up some receptors in my brain. What's the encouraging word for that person?
Yeah, man. First off, Kyle, you know, just again, really the opportunity to come through and have this conversation is huge. You know, it's huge for me. It's huge for my community. It's huge for the work that we're doing. Anybody out there that's listening, trying to figure out where this lands with them, let me be the shining example of what it looks like when all you do without any real goal in mind is start to do something a little different, right? There are so many ways that you can drive positive change and positive impact, support, allyship, procurement policies, racial education sensitivity, get on YouTube, look at some stuff. The more that we educate ourselves as a group, as a society, as a population around the impact and really the negative effect of anti-Black systemic racism in all places, the more we'll get people to care about it. And this is a matter of the heart. This is not a matter of the mind. If you're a good person listening and you can't find a way to convert these words or hear what we're talking about and have that move something in your heart, you need to call me because we need to have a bit more of a conversation around it. But for everybody out there that's listening and they can hear what we're talking about and they can see the passion and they see the opportunity, the time is now. There's never been more focus on the plight that Black people face as a global community around the world than what we have right now. If we do not take this opportunity to seize this moment and really do everything that we can to drive ourselves to real shame, then shame on us. So I would say, if nothing else, find the courage to take one step. If that's self-education, if that's community organizing, if that's having a conversation at work, whatever it is, find a way to move yourself to action. Be amazed by the quality of people that you're surrounded by when people start to come around you and really wrap their arms around trying to do the right thing.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate that. All right. So the typical podcast thing, hit them with where they can connect with you, where they can connect with the movements that you're doing and all that, all those connection points that people are going to want to make with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So your boy's not a big like social media guy. Find me directly, but feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn. It's Emiliano Void, Emiliano Void, like a void check. Feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. If you want to take a look at some of the work that we're doing on the Black Employee Network, feel free to take a look at coxautocanada.com. If you want to take a look at what we're doing in that large-scale industry initiative that we have against anti-Black and systemic racism throughout the Canadian automotive space, that's accelerateauto.ca. But guys, there's no shortage of ways to find your boy. Find a way to get in touch with me. I would love to have a conversation in any capacity with anybody that wants to know about what we're doing.
Yeah, and we'll drop those links in the show notes. I know nobody ever checks the show notes, but they might this time. So yeah, we'll make sure and do that. Man, thanks so much for joining me on the pod. Absolute pleasure. And so glad that I'm connected with you.
I appreciate the opportunity big time, man. It means a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah, awesome. Wow, what a conversation and what an impressive dude. Emiliano, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for joining me. I am so encouraged by our conversation and by the fact that we met through a friend, and I'm glad to be connected to you. I hope that if you're listening, that you are glad that you're now connected in some way to Emiliano. Make sure and go follow him on his socials, on LinkedIn, on anywhere where you can find him. Create that connection. I'm excited because I'm hoping that what he's doing in Canada spills over into the U.S. And allows us to all work toward a greater element of diversity, inclusion, understanding, conversation. Again, this is Contagious Podcast and creating these conversations for automotive innovation. We want to have those contagious conversations. So it's up to you. You're a part of this. Don't just listen to this podcast and let it kind of float around in your head. Go have a conversation. Go talk about what you've heard today with someone. Share this out. Like, comment, rate it on wherever you get your podcast. Allow this contagious energy to go out into the world and not just stop with you. Thank you so much for listening. Can't wait to have you next time. Again, my name is Kyle, and this has been Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. We'll see you next time.